Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
301-230-0980 is the number right here on the Burgundy and Gold. Today you're tapped in to the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. We'll take you up to 7 o'clock on your afternoon drive home. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Adam Kilgore, who covers the Washington Commanders for the Washington Post, he's going to join us. We get his thoughts on the big news that we got earlier this afternoon. AP and company, despite the entire National Football League knowing that the team was going to cut B-Rob outright, they were able to net a sixth-round pick for him. And the one thing that I'm complaining about, and maybe complain is too strong of a word, the one thing that made me raise my eyebrows is the fact that they had to eat the salary, or eat some of the salary. So those of you out there celebrating the fact that they got a sixth-round pick back, they paid for that sixth-round pick. So do with that what you want. Right now, though, the committee was up late last night watching the tape from the Bengals game. We watched the tape from the Patriots game. Now we get geared up for the preseason finale. Tomorrow, noon Eastern time, against the Baltimore Ravens. Who's going to make this final 53? Who's going to do something to make themselves irreplaceable? We'll find out now at Nell's Super Six Pack.
Super Six Pack. 3, 3, 2, 1.
Let's do it. Number six, Nell's Super Six Pack. My top six Commanders that I'm going to have under the microscope tomorrow in the preseason finale against the Baltimore Ravens. Coming in at number six, a name that you all better get pretty damn familiar with, because if he doesn't make this 53, and I think that's a long shot, he will for sure, I think, be on this team's practice squad. Ali Kaho, the UDFA linebacker from UCLA. Another one of the Usos is how we're describing them. One of these linebackers of Samoan descent. All he does is get downhill and try and knock people's faces off. Love the way that he's played in both of the two preseason games. I think in a pinch, he can have a role for you on special teams, and I wouldn't mind seeing him play with the defense either, man. I just love the way that he plays the position, plays with his hair on fire. He's a little bit undersized, so maybe that's why he ended up being undrafted, but this regime knows him well. Ken Norton Jr., former linebackers coach at UCLA. Adam Peters, with plenty of ties back to his old stomping ground. So I think Ali Kaho is somebody that tomorrow really can solidify his spot on the practice squad. Maybe, just maybe, if he balls out and Jordan McGee's not as healthy as we think he is, maybe he sneaks his way onto this final 53. Number five in Nell's Super Six Pack, my top six Commanders that I'll have under the microscope going into the preseason finale tomorrow night against the Baltimore Ravens. Number five is Jacory Brooks. Now, here's the thing. We brought you our 53-man roster 1.0 edition earlier in the week, and I had six wide receivers making this football team. I had Jacory Brooks as the sixth and final wide receiver for your Washington Commanders. Now, let's be real here for a second. The more and more I think about this, maybe, just maybe, Washington goes with five wide receivers. And if that's the case, I think Jacory has done enough to solidify himself a spot on the practice squad. Now, in terms of if they keep six, it's really going to come down to a couple of different guys. It's either Jacory Brooks, it's either K.J. Osborne, or it's Michael Gallup. Those are the guys fighting for that spot. I know River Craycraft is a guy that some folks are looking at saying, well, maybe, just maybe. I know Chris Moore is somebody that people are looking at going, maybe, just maybe. Chris Moore can't catch. Michael Gallup started off well in camp, and then K.J. Osborne. And what did you say to me earlier on the phone? I need you to reiterate it, because I think you hit it right on the head.
I think he's a possession receiver.
Possession receiver, yeah. But when you're playing in the final game of the preseason.
Hey, exactly. Hey, look, you got to bring your game, not your name.
Because when we think about the name, when it comes to K.J. Osborne, well-traveled, I was saying this last year when they picked him up, man. He was more, we're geeked up about Noah Brown. He was a more decorated receiver than Noah was when they brought him in. So, K.J. Osborne definitely, if they keep six wide receivers, it'll come down to Ja'Cory Brooks, K.J. Osborne, and then Michael Gallup fighting for that sixth and final spot. Coming in at number four, and Nell's Super Six Pack, my top six Commanders that I'll have under the microscope heading into tomorrow afternoon's preseason finale. This is a battle that only the real sickos are looking out for. The battle for backup center. Julian Good-Jones released, waived with an injury designation, so I think they'll bring him back on the practice squad. We'll see. But they signed Nick Harris from the Cleveland Browns to kind of shore up the interior of that offensive line. Nick Harris, a guy that was a fifth-round draft pick back in 2020, has played guard, has played center. Him and Mike Dieter right now feel like they're battling for that backup center spot. So Michael Dieter, Nick Harris, two guys that I'm going to be monitoring tomorrow. For Dieter, last year he was your backup center, but clearly if you watch this team play, maybe that's why Tyler Biadasz was like, man, I don't care if I got a third degree, a grade three rather, high ankle sprain. I'm playing because we can't have Michael Dieter on the football field. Obviously, I'm hyperbolizing it. He's an NFL player. I get it. But, man, you needed to upgrade that position. And right now, if we're talking about question marks on this football team, the backup center spot – one of the bigger question marks. So in terms of number four in Nell's Super Six-Pack, I'm cheating. I'm going with two guys. Give me Mike Dieter and give me Nick Harris, the newest member of the Washington Commanders. Number three in Nell's Super Six-Pack, my top six Commanders that I'll have under the microscope heading in to the preseason finale against Baltimore. I'm cheating again, people. Another position battle that maybe folks aren't paying attention to. I think this team is going to keep 10 defensive linemen. Eight are going to play each and every week, each and every game. And then you got to have a couple other guys that can maybe give you a little bit of pop at both edge and on the interior at defensive tackle. But I'm looking at the big boys on the interior right now. Eddie Goldman came out of retirement this offseason, and the hope was he was going to make this 53 and give you a big body to help spell guys on the interior. He has not played big throughout the first two preseason games. I'm sorry. And when you look at him, 6'3", 325, slim as trim. Let's say trim 6'3", 225, or 325 pounds. I don't know if his body type, his play style is what this team is looking for. Didn't pay attention to him a ton against Cincy, but I do remember a couple of plays that stood out. And the main issue that I have with Eddie Goldman is the fact that if you're a big run-stuffing defensive tackle, you can't get blown 4 and 5 yards off the football when you're getting double-teamed. The other thing is this, and I learned this from my guy Sharif Floyd when I got the chance to catch up with him last week. Sharif Floyd, the assistant defensive line coach for the Washington Commanders. We got to do a better job as interior defensive linemen understanding when you're getting double-teamed than when you're facing a combo block. Jazon Newton got called for a defensive holding, one of the rare calls in the National Football League because he was getting combo blocked, and he tried to do a little veteran trick of the trade move. Hold on to the jersey member. Don't let that offensive lineman climb up to your backers. That ultimately got him flagged, but I think that's what you're looking for on the interior. Guys are going to play big. I think the final interior defensive line spot comes down to two guys, three guys, really. Eddie Goldman, Shelton Day, who this team loves, and I know that from talking to people in the building, and then Carl Davis. And I think Carl Davis, if you're looking for that big, space-eating hog molly, Carl Davis is that guy. Right? 335 pounds and looks every bit of it. I'll say this too. When you're wearing the nasty ass number 77, playing interior defensive lineman, you got to be good. You got to run stuff. I've actually liked what I've seen from Carl Davis, but that interior defensive line battle between Eddie Goldman, Shelton Day, Carl Davis, definitely something that I'm going to be looking at. Number two in Nell's Super Six Pack, my top six guys that I'll have under the microscope as we get geared up for the preseason finale tomorrow afternoon. The kicker. Matt Gay, here's the thing. Field goals and the consistency with that was a little bit of an issue during the early stages of camp. I think he's gotten better from that standpoint. But what I think he's lacking at is something that I know Dan Quinn doesn't have a high tolerance for. The kickoffs last week on Monday Night Football against Cincinnati, simply too short. They were too short against New England. I think they were too short Monday night against the Bengals as well. Just look at some of the average starting field position. The first kick that Matt Gay kicked landed at the Cincinnati 12-yard line. Got to kick it deeper than that, right? Another kick that Matt Gay ended up kicking ends up at the Cincinnati 10-yard line. Like, you want to try to get it inside the 5. Let it bounce. That's the goal of this thing, because I believe if it bounces inside the 10 and then lands in the end zone, the ball gets advanced to just the 20-yard line. If you just straight up kick it out of the end zone, the ball get advanced to the 35. Washington struggled with that. If you've been watching special teams and their kickoff unit, a unit that I know they take a ton of pride in. Last year, Washington had one of the best kick coverage units in the National Football League. Through the first two preseason games, they have not gotten off to a good start. I think the primary reason for that is Matt Gay. Number one, Nell Super Six Pack. Top six things I'm looking for. Top six guys I have under the microscope heading into the preseason finale tomorrow afternoon. Another unheralded battle. One of those final defensive end spots. And I think right now, for me, it's down to two guys. It's Cleveland Farrell versus Jalen Holmes. Now, both of these two dudes played, you know, pretty significant snaps for Washington last year. But when you think about the addition of Jacob Martin and Von Miller, I think you can, you know, the numbers game may not play out in their favor. Now, I think they do keep 10 defensive linemen total, right? I've got them keeping Jacob Martin. I've got them keeping Dorrance Armstrong. I've got them keeping Jerzon Newton, Javon Kinlaw, Shelton Day, Deron Payne, Dietrich Wise, Cleveland Farrell, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, and Von Miller. Here's the thing with the last two guys I mentioned, last three guys. One, I'm counting Von as a defensive lineman. For Cleveland Farrell and Javonte Jean-Baptiste, first and foremost, notice that I did omit Jalen Holmes. Him and Farrell may both make it, depending on if they feel like, you know, they can put Javonte Jean-Baptiste on PUP. If they keep him on PUP, doesn't eat up one of your roster spots, and then boom, you know, you can keep both Farrell and Jalen Holmes. These two guys in the preseason, though, kind of been underwhelming, for being honest, right? In that first preseason game, I thought, and I'm being respectful when I say this, Jalen Holmes wasn't very good. Didn't set the edge consistently. He's getting moved in the run game. And I love me some Jalen Holmes. If you think about building a modern-day defensive end in a lab, Jalen Holmes has got it. Thick build, strong at the point of attack. Just got to see him play strong more often. That's going to do it, though, for Nell's Super Six Pack. My top six items, players, I guess, that we're keeping under the microscope heading into the preseason finale. Number six, Ali Kaho, the linebacker. Number five, Ja'Cory Brooks. Number four, the battle at backup center between Michael Dieter and Nick Harris. Number three, the battle for that final interior defensive line spot between Eddie Goldman and Sheldon Day. Number two, the kicker, Matt Gay. And then number three, the battle between Cleveland Farrell and Jalen Holmes for one of those final defensive end spots. That's going to do it for Nell's Super Six Pack. When we come back, we'll go to the guest hotline for the first time this afternoon. Adam Kilgore of the Washington Post joins us next. We'll get his thoughts on the big news of the afternoon. Brian Robinson Jr. out as a member of the Washington Commanders. Adam Kilgore joins us next.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Still rocking and rolling right here on the Team 980. We're always live and free on the always free Odyssey app. You're tapped into the youngest in charge, Linnell Willingham, here on the Burgundy and Gold today. We'll take you up to 7 o'clock right here on your afternoon drive home. Plenty more to get to here in the program. We're getting ready to go out to the guest hotline for the first time this show. But after that, make sure you line up on the phones at 301-230-0980. Our Friday staple here on the Burgundy and Gold today. Burgundy in bold, your top bold predictions for the 2025 Washington Commanders season. Right now, though, we go out to the guest hotline for the first time this show, where we find our pal Adam Kilgore, who covers the Washington Commanders for the Washington Post. You can give him a follow on the X app at Adam Kilgore WP. Adam, what's going on, brother? How are you? I didn't punch you up, Adam, so we did not get to hear you respond to my how are you? How are you, pal?
I'm here now. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. What's going on?
Okay. Man? What's up, Linnell? How are you? Thanks for having me.
I am good, man. I am good. You have been out there, boots on the ground, each and every day out at Washington Commanders training camp practice. I want to start with the big news that we got earlier this afternoon, despite the entire National Football League, Adam, knowing that Washington was going to part ways with B-Rob one way or another, they're still able to net a sixth-round pick coming up in the 2026 draft in exchange for him. The one piece that kind of made me change the way that I look at the trade, Adam, is essentially they bought that 2026 sixth-round pick because they had to eat some of B-Rob's salary. Your overall thoughts on the move and then the way you view this running back room now that B-Rob's no longer a part of it?
Yeah, I thought it was a great move. I mean, you're right. That is a variable, them paying down some of the salary, which I think is good, aggressive GMing by Adam Peters and really owning by Josh Harris. I mean, he's the one spending the money.
Right.
So I think that's really good, savvy. It's a good business strategy, honestly. I mean, if you hit on a six-round pick and he becomes a three-year contributor for you,
right,
that's worth well over $1 million. So, that's a good bet, I feel like. The money part aside, I had kind of guessed that if they were able to trade Brian Robinson, solid, not spectacular running back heading into free agency after this season, it would be like they give Robinson and a seventh and get a sixth back.
Yeah.
I guess that's where the money comes in. But, all in all, I think it's a good move for the Commanders. I mean, it's not going to change their world, but it's good. It's good asset management. And as far as the running back room goes, I do think they will miss Brian Robinson a little bit. He brought a physicality that Chris Rodriguez can replicate, but I don't think duplicate. But I do think that the room is in a good place. I think Rodriguez, it's funny. It kind of seems like, fantasy football players and Commanders fans are incredibly excited about Jacory Kroski-Merritt, and he's had a fantastic camp. He's definitely earned a role on the team. I think will be a very, strong contributor and hit some home runs, kind of that big playback with upside to be an every down back. But I think at least early on the year, the guy to watch in the backfield is Chris Rodriguez. He's had a great camp.
Yeah.
He was 4.9 yards a carry and albeit limited snaps last year. I think he can get those tough yards. He's going to get all the goal line work. So if you're a fantasy player, that's important.
Right.
I think he's more explosive than a lot of people give him credit for. He had a lot of big runs in college at Kentucky. He obviously had the 40 yarder the other night. He was talking to my colleague, Matt Cohen, for a piece that Matt wrote that's on our website now. And he talked about how in his offseason training, he really focused on more,
yes,
on his speed, his explosion, and even had the detail that he hit 20 miles an hour more often in camp this year than he did all of last season. And so, I guess all that to say is that, even though I think the flashy and, justifiably exciting player is Jacory Kroski-Merritt, good old Bill,
yeah.
I think Chris Rodriguez is the guy to watch, and he's really under the radar.
I think it's a good point that you bring up. Just to play devil's advocate here for a second, Adam, looking at it through this lens of, well, you take Brian Robinson Jr. off of this football team, and now Austin Ekeler, really your only established back. And then one thing that's made me raise my eyebrow, I'm not overly concerned by it because I think it may just be a precautionary thing, Adam, but after two preseason games, Bill Merritt has been in the black non-contact jersey the very next practice. So you do wonder, is durability going to be something that we have to monitor with him throughout the course of the season? But to your point, I think Chris Rodriguez, his story, Adam, I think is awesome. I'm always a big fan of guys that don't let, their circumstances, I guess, dictate their work ethic. And he has had a tumultuous past, 2.5-3 years. If you think about the way his career ended at Kentucky, had a little bit of a fumbling problem at the end. He caught a DUI in his final year there. And then Ron Rivera and company took the chance on him. And then last year there were rumors of, well, is this a guy that's going to take football seriously? There were talks about him being in shape, not being in shape. But then when his number was called last year, he definitely showed up. So I definitely think he's a guy to look forward to, as you mentioned here. But we asked this question yesterday on the phones, and we got a bunch of different responses. Want to see what you have to think about this. Despite, all the attention that the four running backs are getting, I said this at the beginning of the offseason. Last year, Jayden Daniels led this team in rushing yards. I did not think that was something I wanted him to do again. But the more and more you think about it, it feels like he probably is in line once again to be this team's leading rusher. Will that be something that ends up hurting this Washington Commanders team?
Well, I mean, that certainly could happen, and I don't think necessarily would hurt them in as much as, I think Jayden Daniels is a really smart runner.
Yes.
And I think Cliff Kingsbury was and will be judicious in how he uses them in this sort of planned running game, the the design runs for Jaden Daniels.
Right.
I think every Commanders fan rightfully worries about Daniels getting hurt. But he proved in year one, this time last year, remember, it was like every other conversation about the team was, you know, will Jaden Daniels slide? You know, can he get out of harm's way? Because he took those crazy hits in college. And he showed in year one that he can. It was like a non-issue by, you know, week four. The one hit he took and hurt his ribs on, that was more of like an awkward play that kind of could have happened to anybody. I think he's proven to me he's like kind of that Lamar Jackson type in the way that he's like so fast and athletic and sort of spatially aware that he's just not going to let people lay huge hits on him, even in the designed run game. And so, you know, if Jaden Daniels turns out to be this team's leading rusher again, like, I don't think that's necessarily a negative outcome.
I agree with you. Not at all, right? Just ask the folks up 95 in Baltimore if they have any issues with Lamar Jackson, taking off. The one thing I'll say, too, and I'm glad you brought up designed runs from Cliff Kingsbury. I don't have the splits in front of me, Adam, but most of Jaden Daniels' rushing yards last year came off of scrambles. I think he's just got an innate ability to put pressure on the line of scrimmage while being a drop-back passer in the traditional sense. And as you mentioned, like, he's really good at getting out of harm's way and falling to the turf awkwardly sometimes, but he does a good job keeping himself healthy. Joined right now by our pal Adam Kilgore, who covers the Washington Commanders for the Washington Post. Give him a follow on the X app at Adam Kilgore Washington Post, or WP, excuse me. I want to flip over to the defensive side of the football, Adam. One of the biggest questions facing this football team entering 2025 is, well, are they going to be improved stopping the run? They were bottom three, bottom four in pretty much every metric when it comes to run defense. The one thing that jumped off the page for me, third worst in terms of rushing yards allowed before contact. I know we haven't seen a lot of the run defense in the preseason games because you played sparingly against Cincinnati and no starters played at all against New England. When you look at the early portion of the season, when you've got Josh Jacobs off of a short week, you've got Ashton Jeanty, Bijan Robinson, or Marion Hampton, you still have question marks about this run defense, or is it something that you're willing to just live with here?
Well, certainly, you know, I mean, you nailed it. That's a big question about this defense. And, you know, we do have to see it. Although, you know, if you're looking for reasons for optimism, I would say they're there. Javon Kinlaw had a great training camp.
Yes.
I think he's been kind of exactly the player that they wanted him to be and that they've needed. He has not sort of lived up to his billing as a 13th overall pick, which is what he was in San Francisco 5 years ago. Injuries early in his career, especially a really, really bad knee injury, have a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
And so I think he's kind of a player, you know, you don't often think about a player in his fifth year who's just signed a contract for $30 million guaranteed as like an upside play, but that's really what he is. I mean, he's got a lot left to he would make this point himself. He's got a lot of room, a lot of talent left to kind of explore. And gosh, I mean, you know, you've been out there, Linnell, like it, he is just an impressive, impressive looking football player, just a massive human being who moves really well. And Bobby Wagner put it a really cool way at practice today. He said he's just been putting guards in the backfield all camp. And that's true. And so, man, he's a guy who I think a lot of that run defense will hinge on. He hit a couple of impressive plays against Cincinnati. He's got to stay healthy. That's been an issue for him at times in his career. I mean, I guess that's every NFL player. Mm-hmm. But, and Deron Payne is obviously super solid. Dietrich Wise is a real powerful defensive end. He's not a classic sort of, you know, bend around the corner kind of edge player. But, man, he is a strong individual, and his strength as a D end is stopping the run. And so I think those two free agency additions are going to go a long way in trying to solve that problem. And, you know, we'll probably determine if they do or not.
I agree. You mentioned what Bobby said. Yeah. I mean, there was a couple of plays against Cincy where, I mean, you could just see the violent hands jolting the guard is the best way that I could put it, man. When you're knocking guards 2 and 3 yards in the backfield, your run defense is going to get better. That front seven overall, though, a really interesting group. The one thing I've continued to say, Adam, is, you know, I think they've got to earn the right to rush the passer. We've been out there every day. This pass rush, you feel them each and every practice. But the key is going to be when you're in the regular season, can you be good on first and second down, stopping the run, to where you get yourselves in these obvious passing situations and you can get exotic with the fronts. Dorrance Armstrong, another guy on that front seven, Adam, that we've talked about, led the team in pressures last year despite only having 5 sacks. What are your expectations for him come the regular season, and do you think he is a guy that could be, similarly to Javon Kinlaw, about to kind of burst out here?
Yeah, I mean, one really cool wrinkle from training camp is they've been using Dorrance Armstrong in, you know, sort of like third and long situations, like in passing situations, over the guard as more of an interior
matchup nightmare.
Like a yard. Yes, and I think that's going to be a really interesting wrinkle to watch for this defense. They seem pretty excited about it. Von Miller is the obvious pass rush addition. I think he's going to be kind of a pass rush specialist for this team. I think Frankie Louvu is he's sort of arrow is still pointing up as far as his progression as a pass rusher. It wouldn't surprise me if he ends up leading the team in sacks, just the way they blitz him and just use him off the edge as a pass rusher. I do think they're still in a position where they probably need to generate more pass rushes as far as just, you know, let real, you know, stud pass rushers pin their ears back off the edge. But they do have some of that, and I think that they're going to generate some of that, like you mentioned, with the matchups and Armstrong being over the guards is a big part of that. And I think they're counting on Johnny Newton, too, to tap into more of his potential, after he dealt with some foot injuries that kind of put him behind as a rookie. I think he showed that Patriots game is really indicative of the kind of player that he is, where, you know, when it was first and 10 and they're running downhill, he can be overwhelmed a little bit just because of his lack of size in the middle. But when it's more of a passing situation, his speed and quickness, whether lined up in a gap or on stunts where he can kind of like curl around the end, he's got a lot of value and a lot of skill in the way he can do that. And I think that might be another way in which they can sort of find some pass rush.
Yeah, he's a guy that I've got circled, Adam. I got the chance to catch up with Sharif Floyd, their assistant defensive line coach, after practice a couple of days ago. And, man, it felt like all of our conversation was about, you know, Jazon Newton and the type of steps that he could take forward. Something funny that happened in the presser the other day. Adam Peters sidestepping John Kimes' follow-up question of, well, was it a mutual decision between the team and McLaurin for him not to be there in attendance on Monday night? Your reaction to that, and I heard your follow-ups as well, so feel free to share. And then do you think he shows up on Saturday?
Well, I have no idea if he shows up on Saturday. He was an excused absence from the first game, and, you know, I don't know if they're going to excuse him again. I guess we'll have to find out. Yeah. Certainly a big question. The Where's Waldo game that Dan Quinn didn't want to play. I mean, that's really the most important thing that's happening for this team right now is like, you know, is he going to show up? What does that mean? His camp has been pretty quiet about, when he shows up for practice, what that actually means as far as his comfort with the progression of talks and all that. I still think the whole time, you know, as ugly as it's gotten with a trade request or with him not showing up for the game, which again was excused, but I think if you put Truth Serum and Dan Quinn, you probably would just rather have him there. I've always just thought it makes way too much sense for both parties to eventually reach a deal. They started out very far apart. Outwardly, it doesn't seem like they've gotten that much closer. I'm sure they've made some progress, but it doesn't seem like anything is imminent as far as I can tell. It's easy to say, and it's true that both sides need to make a deal. Terry's a proud guy and has earned the right, to do what he's doing this summer. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes the more these things linger, the more animosity grows, pride gets in the way on either side, and a deal that should happen, can't be agreed upon. And so, until it happens. It hasn't happened. And I guess at that point, the question becomes, and again, I haven't got any clarity on this from McLaurin's camp, is he willing to miss game checks?
That's the big thing. All you keep hearing is he's super dug in, Adam. And I go, well, you can show me better than you can tell me, right? If you sit out week one, Chris Jones style and sit in the press box, then we'll know how serious he is.
Yeah, and so far, I don't think I'm stepping on any limbs here. Like, if the Commanders wanted to play hardball, They probably could have passed his ankle in terms of being able to play and participate way earlier than they could have and try to find him, and they haven't. So it's been a very sort of like, you know, polite hold in slash out slash contract dispute. But, you know, at some point, like, it's got to come to a head if they don't get to a deal. And so I guess there's, you know, there's a lot left to sort of monitor and see where this goes.
Adam, we appreciate you. As always, make sure you check out Adam's work in the Washington Post. Enjoy the game tomorrow, brother.
Thanks, man. Good
talking to you. That is our guy, Adam Kilgore of the Washington Post. Give him a follow on the X app at Adam Kilgore WP, and make sure you check out his work in the Washington Post. He's got a story up now about how the Washington Commanders got a sixth-round pick back from the Commanders in exchange for Brian Robinson Jr. His piece yesterday, I thought was pretty interesting. He did Commander superlatives coming out of training camp, so make sure you check that out at thewashingtonpost.com. Friday staple coming up next here on the Burgundy and Gold today. It is time for Burgundy in Bold, your bold predictions for the Commanders 2025 season. Once you lined up on the phones with that at 301-230-0980, it is Burgundy in Bold. When we come back, me and Anthony will give our Burgundy in Bold prediction for the 2025 Washington Commanders. That is next here on the Team 980.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
301-230-0980 is the number right here on the Burgundy and Gold today. You're tapped in the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham, taking you up to 7 o'clock. Coming up in the final hour of the program, our guy Steve Weish of the NFL Network going to join us. We'll take a spin around the National Football League, and we'll take a look at some of the hot-button stories around the NFL as we get geared up for the final week of the preseason. Shedeur Sanders playing tomorrow. A couple of injury situations to monitor. A couple of contract situations to monitor. We'll do that coming up at about 6:30. Right now, though, a Friday staple. Can we call it that? Friday staple here on the Burgundy and Gold today. We're going to get Burgundy in Bold, your top bold predictions for the 2025 Washington Commanders. Last week on Burgundy and Bold, I gave you a Deebo Samuel prop. I told you that Deebo Samuel would lead this team in total touchdowns. I don't know how bold that actually was, but all in all, I think Deebo Samuel's going to have a monster season for today in Burgundy and Bold. I think that rookie corner Trey Amos, by season's end, will be considered this team's best corner. And it's not even close. Not even close. So I'll even take it a step further. Maybe in the season opener, when they take on the New York Giants, he has been that left corner all off season long. And him and Jonathan Jones were battling back and forth for a little bit, but he's got the job now, it feels like. And he's earned it because he's had a tremendous camp, was good in the joint practice in Boston, played well in the preseason game Friday night. It stinks that we didn't get to see him against Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, although I will admit that. That would have definitely, it would have made this not even as bold, honestly, because I thought he was going to handle himself well out there. But that is my Burgundy and Bold prediction, that Trey Amos, by season's end, will be considered this team's best corner, better than Marshawn Lattimore, and better than fan favorite Mikey Samer still. I think with Amos, the number one thing that really intrigues me about him is when you're long and can run the way that he can, I think you've got a real shot to have a long, long career. And all the intangibles with him stand out as well, right? Super confident when he walks up to the line of scrimmage, talks trash, love everything about him. The one question mark I had about Trey Amos heading into the preseason opener, you can cover well all day in 7-on-7, but how are you going to act when it's your turn to have to set the edge at the cornerback spot and force a play back inside? You going to duck smoke, or are you going to be somebody that's going to stick your face mask in there? He showed you time and time again in that first preseason game. He had a couple of different times where he forced the play back inside because he set a real strong edge. That's the thing I worried about with him. He alleviated that concern for me in that preseason opener. And I think as far as week one goes, and maybe I'm tripping with this, you let me know at 301-230-0980. it's weird because there are politics that get played in the NFL. When you travel a corner with a wide receiver, I think it's very easy for the other defensive backs to go, well, damn, you think I'm some trash? You think I couldn't handle it, him switching sides? But if I was Joe Witt Jr., what I've seen from Amos during camp, I'm shadowing Malik Nabers in week one with Trey Amos. Straight up. I don't care how Marshawn Lattimore feels about it. I don't care how Mikey Samvers still feels about it. We will travel with Malik Nabers, and it will be Trey Amos being the guy doing it. I think he's earned that right. He has been their best, most consistent defensive back all throughout training camp. And I know Mikey Samvers still has made a couple of plays on the ball. But a guy, Craig Hoffman, said this at Nauseam. Him moving back to the slot is not going to be some, you know, super easy transition. And if we're being open, honest, and transparent, last year in the slot at the beginning of the season, he had some struggles. He did. First 3 or 4 weeks in the NFL, he led the NFL in touchdown catches given up. Just is what it is. Just facts. Now, do I think he's a fine player? Yes. I think Mikey, if I'm being real, I may put a C on Mikey's chest. Like, that's how I feel about him. I think he's that type of cat for them. But fact of the matter is this. And you told me not to say this when we were in our pre-show meeting. I feel the need to say it now. He's their best corner. How is he not?
Why do you jump the gun, dude?
It's not me
jumping
the gun.
We haven't seen anything, dude. It's preseason. We've seen some practices. And you always talk about
England.
How bad the receivers are out there.
He went to New England and had no problems.
And this is what you're leaning on.
He went to New England. And he went to New England and acted a fool. 4K Trey.
Again,
baby.
It's too soon to tell,
Trey.
My boy.
I know it's too soon
to tell.
I know it's probably too soon, but I say that to really get the folks to understand how high.
If T. Higgins and Jamar Chase were out there and he was locking them up, all right.
He would have.
And look, now he might be ready for the moment. But, bro, it's too soon. We haven't seen nothing. You talking about he's the best corner. See, look, this is your problem now. And sometimes this is the problem with fans as well. We get excited about the potential of these guys. Like Bill, we get excited about his potential, what he could be, the fact that he could be a home run hitter. We have not seen much from Trey Amos yet. So we got to pump the brakes. We cannot say he's the best corner. We have a guy on our team that's been there. He's a Pro Bowler. Like, come on. Like, we want him to get back to that form. Why aren't you obsessed with his potential to get back to his peak form? Why?
I am. And I'm a big fan of Marshawn Lattimore. Right? Southeast Sean. Well, I don't even call him Marshawn. I call him Sean. That's how locked in me and Brett. I call him Sean. Southeast Sean, man. He gets it. And I think his comments that he made during mandatory minicamp, he's a quiet, soft-spoken dude. So for him to come out and say this, I took a lot from it. He straight up told us, like, yeah, I tried to gut through it last year. I wasn't healthy. I didn't want to look sweet to my teammates. And I went out and played. And his play suffered as a result of it, man. Sports Talk on the Team 980 is brought to you by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. We'll go out to the phones, 301-230-0980. Burgundy and Bold, Friday staple here on the Burgundy and Gold today. Your bold predictions for the 2025 Washington Commanders. Let's go to Dominic. Wants to chime in. Dominic, if you're going to say what I think you're going to say, you put my burgundy and bold to shame, brother. What do you got for us?
Well, I mean, I thought about it. I'm like, do I really want to change it? I should have waited for this call a couple days ago when I said that Crosby Merritt was going to break Alfred Morris's rushing numbers.
That was yours from the other day. I remember.
Yeah, and I probably should have used it for today. But, you know, I think we're going to see, it's not necessarily, maybe it's not bold enough, but I think you're going to see the NFL MVP, the NFL Coach of the Year, and a Super Bowl appearance. All in the same season.
Wow. Well, that's the point of the segment, brother. Burgundy and bold. Of those things that you listed, Jaden Daniels MVP. Dan Quinn, Coach of the Year, which he should have been last year, by the way. Let's just call it what it is. And then Super Bowl appearance. What do you think is most likely to happen out of those?
I think Jaden Daniels, MVP.
Wow. Well, there we go. Dominic, we appreciate you as always, brother. Enjoy the weekend, man. 301-230-0980 is the number. Burgundy in bold. Your top bold predictions for the 2025 Washington Commanders. And we heard my bold prediction. Are you ready to get bold?
Sir?
Uh-oh. Good gosh. Because Lord knows what you're about to say.
You say you think you know what I'm going to say?
No, I said Lord knows what you're about to say. No one knows what the hell you're about to say. I guess people say that about me too, huh? But I feel like, honestly, right, I feel like I didn't go bold enough. I feel like I didn't go bold enough. Now to Dominic talk about, he originally called it and said Terry McLaurin triple crown. That's what he originally called it and said.
No. He said he had a triple crown and it was three different things. All right, but when we do bold predictions, are we going to go game by game basis? Are we going to go season's end? Like what are the parameters of this bold prediction that I'm about to make?
Just make it bold. Clearly, I didn't go bold enough. My bold prediction, if you're just now joining us here on the Burgundy and Gold today, our Friday staple, Burgundy and Bold, your top bold predictions for the 2025 Washington Commanders. I think that Trey Amos is going to be considered this team's best corner by season's end. And in the season opener, I am willing to give him the responsibility of traveling with Malik Nabers. And I know it may rub Southeast Sean the wrong way. I know Mikey may feel some type of way about it because these DBs are competitive. They're a competitive group of people. But I love what I've seen from Trey Amos to this point, and I understand it. Yes. Well, I got J.P. Finley just tweeted at me and said, please listen to Ant. Look, y'all pick up what I'm putting down, though. Trey Amos has been the real deal. Calling him sticky throughout training camp, I don't even think it does it justice. I genuinely do not think it does it justice. He has been awesome throughout camp. And there was one thing with him, because I noticed it back in the spring. When you're a technician the way that he is at that position and your hands and feet are always lined up and you're never out-leveraged and you do a good job of changing direction, which we've seen, the one thing I worried about with him, because remember, there's been another former first-round corner that came in here and lit it up, and that was when Terry was running outside. Emmanuel Forbes was first-team All-Ashburn and had a tremendous rookie camp, and then we saw what it was and what it wasn't with him. When I saw Trey Amos set the edge against the Patriots, I said, okay, sign me up for more of that. Because that's probably the thing that I worry about the most when it comes to young corners in the NFL. One, how do you translate to the NFL speed going up against NFL competition? But this is a dude that played his ball in the SEC, so there's nothing he hadn't seen before. But physicality, toughness, Joe Witt says it all the time, man. We live a certain lifestyle here on this defense. And if you can't get with it, you got to get gone. Ask Emmanuel Forbes. Ask Benjamin St. Juice. Ask Michael Davis. I think Amos and his ability to be physical at the point of attack, setting the edge in the run game, like that's just as important as anything we're going to see from him from a coverage standpoint. And he's shown well doing that as well. So maybe I'm hyperbolizing it. Maybe I'm too soon. Maybe I'm too early on it. But sign me up for Trey Amos, man. Sign me up.
I think you just said it. You're too early for it.
I'm too
early. 301. Hey, let's revisit this.
Let's revisit it.
Week eight? Half the season's gone.
Let's just look at who Trey Amos is going to have to go up against in the early portion of the season. It's not like he's going up against Murderers Row right off the rip. He's got Nabers in week one. That's going to be a tall task. And Commander fans out there, I don't know if you understand it or not. Malik Nabers, I think he's the best receiver in the division.
He's a dog.
Like, seriously. And I know A.J. Brown is tremendous. That's the other guy that
and
I would have.
And CeeDee Lamb, dude.
And CeeDee Lamb. But A.J. Brown's better than CeeDee Lamb. If there's an argument for who's the best receiver in the division, I think it comes down to Nabers, Brown, and that's really – I don't think CeeDee's – he's in that tier. Gosh, he's in that tier of guys, I guess. But think about this. CeeDee Lamb gets buku targets.
So does every other great receiver.
No, A.J. Brown does not – he has Devontae on the other side. He's not dominating targets. The Eagles barely even throw the damn ball. So, AJ is one of one, man. I'm telling you. I can remember it now. Mike Vrabel's still pissed off about the fact that they traded him away on draft night for Treylon Burks.
So are you getting mad that Justin Jefferson gets so many targets, that Ja'Marr Chase gets so many targets?
It's not that I'm getting upset with it. I'm just saying it definitely.
That's your team's best player. What are you going to do? Get him the ball. Like, their best player last year was Saquon Barkley. What did he do?
Get him the ball. I understand that. But CD, I think, is a beneficiary of a high volume of targets.
Okay.
I don't think he's better than A.J. Brown. I don't think he's, like, from a fluidity standpoint, we know ball, we watch ball. Who moves better, bro? Neighbors is a freak, young.
He is.
You're not going to sit here and try to tell me he's not. But
you're making it seem like a guy in CeeDee Lamb that's been in the league for several years. We're talking about several years being a top five receiver.
He's got a great body of work. He's got a great body of work. Didn't Neighbors, like, break the rookie catch record and then it was shattered by Brock Bowers? Didn't that happen last year? Come on, man.
I don't know, man.
Put some respect on Neighbors, bro. That's what I'm saying.
I do respect Neighbors, but I don't know, man.
This is what'll upset fans here locally. I don't even think Terry's in the conversation for the best receiver in the division. I'm not even thinking hard about it. And that's what I'm saying. Y'all get upset at this, but the reality is this: when it comes to the wide receiver position,
I think it just speaks to the volume of talent that we have in the NFC East, bro.
In the NFC East and in the NFL,
he might be 10. But those other guys that you named, the Terry, Neighbors, the CeeDee Lambs, the AJ, they're also in the top 10, bro.
I think Terry, you can rank them anywhere from 10 to 15. It's bingo. Different tier. Okay, so that's all I'm trying to get you to understand and acknowledge. So it's a different tier.
So you have Neighbors where? Tier what?
What tier you think I got him in?
Dude. Now you're not a serious guy.
No, you know I'm being serious. But here's the thing, though. Those guys, like, I wouldn't even have to think hard about it. If you ask me Neighbors or Terry, Neighbors. CD or Terry. CD.
Okay, that's fair, AJ, bro.
It's fair, but you just about to blow a gasket over it.
No, I'm just saying, you're putting Neighbors in tier one, which is ridiculous.
Dog, by season's end, him and BTJ are going to both be considered top 10 wideouts.
Say no more.
The convo's not even going to be a debate.
Say no more.
So, final hour of power. Wow, we're already at the last part of the show. Final hour of power. Coming up next here on the Burgundy and Gold today, Steve Wyche of the NFL Network going to join us in about a half hour. When we come back, though, I'm going to say something that's going to upset a lot of people. Make sure you stick around to hear that next here on the Team 980.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks. The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.